Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers. Additional KCRW programs and podcasts are available at kcrw.com.
From KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's go!
Terrorist plots and wiretap worries, the cartoon controversy, the Bush budget, and the Democrats in disarray again. Hello, and welcome once more to Left, Right, and Center, public radio's antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Sarah Terry, sitting in the moderator's seat for our regular host and centrist, Matt Miller, who's away on business this week. On the right, joining us from Washington, D.C., as always, is panel regular Tony Blankley, editorial page editor of The Washington Times. Robert Scheer joins us from San Francisco today. He's a syndicated columnist based at the San Francisco Chronicle and editor of the investigative internet magazine TruthDig.com. And from the progressive blogosphere here in our Santa Monica studio is panel regular Arianna Huffington, editor of HuffingtonPost.com. Well, on Thursday, President Bush informed the nation that the U.S. and its allies foiled a plot hatched by al-Qaeda sympathizers to hijack and fly a plane into a building in Los Angeles, the tallest building on the West Coast. The fact that this incident happened in 2002 and the fact that Bush is currently in the midst of a wiretapping controversy caused some eyebrow raising and a few cynical comments. Tony Blankley, did it do that to you?
No.
Why is that not a surprise?
Look, there's obviously some communications tactics involved in what both the president's opponents and the president are saying about the war on terror and the efforts. I'm amused that from time to time when the president talks about the war on terror in generalities, he's accused of just raising it without any basis just to gin the polling numbers. And now when he gets specific, then some people say, how dare he be specific about something and something that already happened. Well, of course, he couldn't be specific about something that hasn't happened yet.
Oh, but come on, Tony. There's such a pattern of, like, the alert goes up before the elections. I mean, you can almost laugh and sort of see, you know, Bush is in trouble, then raise a security alert.
When did the alert go up before the last election?
It was up in the month.
It didn't, actually.
Yeah.
You're talking about 2002, not 2004. They haven't even used the alerts.
No, 2004.
What happened before the 2004 election was Osama bin Laden went out and made a tape, and most people don't think that Bush has control over when Osama bin Laden makes his statements.
There's still—
Even if Al Jazeera does.
I sidetracked you if you'd like to continue your comments on Bush.
No, look, I think that this is a contest not particularly between Republicans and Democrats, but between two different branches of government, which is why you're seeing some Republicans opposing him, not because they want to assert the prerogatives of Congress. You also see some politicians like Heather Wilson, the Republican from New Mexico, who has come out expressing some concerns because she's down in the polls, or not down, but has a closer race than she expected, and she's trying to play some sort of a political, and I think she's misplayed it based on New Mexico politics, but there are a lot of reasons why people are going to oppose. But I don't think, as long as the public understands the fundamental issue, and the president is speaking pretty well to that, the danger, I don't think that it's going to politically hurt the president, and he's going to be able to continue doing what he needs to in surveillance in order to protect the country, and the Democrats won't be able to make any political points on it.
Robert Scheer, somehow I have a feeling you're going to have something different to say.
Well, I think Tony totally missed the point here, which is it was let's be factual. It was disingenuous for the president to bring this up in a context of defending spying on American people in an unauthorized fashion and to justify all the illegal measures that have been taken because, in fact, this plot, as it were, which was supposed to have been discussed a month after 9/11, had nothing to do with surveillance. In fact, even the president didn't make such a claim. And Vincent Canestraro, who was the CIA's counterterrorism director, who everyone reported to, flat out said the plots outlined by Mr. Bush were foiled by human intelligence and not the NSA surveillance. So this is a red herring. That's why the president brought it up. Whatever the value of that work and intelligence, it had to do with the cooperation of other intelligence agencies around the world. It had nothing to do with violating the rights of American citizens. And so it was a total distortion of the argument.
Ariana?
Well, that's actually the most important point, that they have absolutely no proof that even one life has been saved thanks to warrantless domestic spying, and that this all could not have been achieved simply by following the law. I mean, it is absolutely undeniable that the president has broken the law. The Constitution. It is not deniable. If you look at the way that Gonzalez has been answering these questions, you see how he also knows that it is not deniable. You have him. You have no Supreme Court precedent for what happened. On the contrary, the law creating the FISA court has been broken. The Constitution has been violated, and they cannot point to any single reason why this was good for America in terms of keeping us more secure. They cannot even point to the fact that the 10 people who have had follow-up investigations on them based on this wiretapping, whether they had any connection with Al-Qaeda or not, we do not even know that. They did not dare swear in Alberto Gonzalez. I mean, this thing stinks to high heaven. And the only reason why the public is still, for some reason, behind it in slim majorities is because the opposition has not made a coherent enough case about how completely irrelevant it is to keeping us safe. In fact, another distraction from really keeping us safe, a job at which we find out more evidence every day. This administration has been lousy.
You can assert your propositions with vigor, as you do, but it doesn't make it true and correct. For you to assert, or for me to assert, that the Constitution has been violated seems to me to be at best a judgment and a very controverted judgment, because there are lawyers on both sides, good lawyers, who will argue that the president has inherent powers. And you can go back to U.S. v. Dennis and a number of World War II-era Supreme Court cases that clearly give the president extraordinary powers during wartime. The interesting question is whether this is during wartime or not. And in that regard, I think there's some ambiguity. We have cases in the past that say that the power. No, they have cases that say you don't have to go to a declared war to have wartime powers. We had those decisions made during the Vietnam War. On the other hand, there are some people like me who are sort of purists who would prefer to see a formal congressional declaration of war in order to invoke full wartime powers. But this is a matter amongst which reasonable, brilliant constitutional scholars can dispute, and it's not a matter that can be asserted accurately as beyond dispute.
Well, you know what, Tony? If you go back to what the president was saying during the 2004 campaign when he was defending the Patriot Act, he said, and I'm quoting, "Anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do." So either the president lied to the American people clearly and unequivocally, or he broke the law. I mean, that's really, there's no ambiguity about that. And I'm sorry, ambiguity helps you guys in this instance, but there isn't any.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here for a second, though. This debate could go on forever, as everybody knows, about what's constitutional and what's not. But I think the really important question here is there a breaking point in the way the American public perceives this story? Because this debate could really go on forever without any impact, without any measurable sort of feeling on the part of the public that, yeah, they finally had it with the president and the way he's approaching the security of the country or not. Robert, what do you say?
Well, the problem with appealing to the majority judgment in a situation like this is that the majority often does the wrong thing when frightened in wartime talk. That's why we have a constitution. That's why the founders of this country put in restraints. It was precisely because they knew that an imperial executive could bamboozle the public and get them to do all sorts of terrible things in the name of security. And in this case, I mean, I don't feel like piling on because Tony knows his argument is weak. He knows that Congress is delegate. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be insulting, but I just get the feeling maybe I don't even have to speak here because it's so obviously the president is in the wrong. We are not at war because Congress has not declared war. Congress very specifically in 1978 passed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act preventing exactly this behavior. And it should be a no-brainer that Bush is out of line. And he's violating the law. It should be a no-brainer, I would think. And if the mass media has been intimidated or the Democrats have been intimidated to make back that point, that's not a question of logic. It's a question of being cowardly.
Tony,
by the way, can I just draw out one little point, maybe a segue to another topic? The reason
I want to segue back into your answer.
Okay, no, but let me just say, Tony, and you know this, the public will turn against it when there are the glaring cases of abuse, come, like there was with Martin Luther King. One of the reasons we had FISA is because the government, under Democrats and Republicans, went out to destroy Martin Luther King and did everything they could. That was the subtext of what happened at Coretta King's funeral. That's why Jimmy Carter warned against this kind of surveillance. That's why in the service there was a warning against what happens during wartime, because during the Vietnam War, when Martin Luther King dared to criticize the war in strong terms, the government of the United States went out to destroy him. That's why we have these new restraints in the law that were passed.
We're segueing back into my sort of guiding the conversation here, which is going to be, Tony, your final word on the subject, because this will continue to go on, we know, and then we're going to move on to the topic of the cartoons that have outraged the Muslim world. But Tony, you first.
Two quick points. One, I think that Martin Luther King was bugged by Democrats, Kennedy and Johnson, because Nixon didn't come in until 69. Two, regarding the FISA statute that you say he's broken, whether or not he has, and that's disputable, both FISA and the War Powers Act are acts that Congress has passed that presidents have not recognized as superseding their inherent power. That's a debate and a fight between branches of government that probably will not get resolved.
Okay, let's segue next into the cartoons that have been outraging the Muslim world, first published by Danish newspaper, subsequently published in Europe, but not so much in the United States. Ariana.
Well, this has been very, very bad news, both for Islamic reformers and for the West, who would like to see them succeed, and very good news for Sam Huntington and his thesis that there is an inevitable clash of civilizations. I mean, this is really incredibly troubling. It's particularly troubling because the Danish cartoonists are not Muslims. So this goes beyond the Rushdie affair, because you could say, well, this was a dispute within Islam since Rushdie was a Muslim, but you can't say that about the Danish cartoonists. And it's something which really shows what we're dealing with and why we need to be dealing with it in the right way instead of dealing with it by invading a country that was a secular Muslim country.
Tony, you raised some interesting questions, I thought, this week in your column, and your book, obviously, The West's Last Chance, addresses these issues as well. You spoke very vociferously about the fact that the West, the United States, should be publishing these cartoons. Why?
I don't think vociferously, but firmly, I think, perhaps. But look,
firmly, I'll take that correction.
The first mistake that some people make is to say we don't want to bring on a clash of civilizations. And I would love to be able to support that proposition. Unfortunately, the radical Muslims in the world have already engaged in that struggle. Not all Muslims, but radicals have. So we are responding to an already engaged struggle. Now, there's a problem that, and it's really the crux of the strategic dilemma we have in any dealings with radical Islam. And we've faced it in Afghanistan, we faced it in Iraq, and we're facing it on the cartoon issue, which is any time that we take an affirmative action that we think is important in the struggle, we have a predictable side effect that we drive more Muslims from non-radicalism into radicalism. In Afghanistan, when we occupied a Muslim country, there's no doubt that many Muslims got radicalized by that. Most people, I think that getting rid of the Taliban that had given sukkah to bin Laden was justified, the cost-benefit justified it. In Iraq, the jury is out on whether, as Rumsfeld said, we don't have metrics on whether we're creating more terrorists than where they're killing. And on the cartoon matter, there's no doubt that we are antagonizing more Muslims by republishing the cartoons. On the other hand, to be intimidated into not expressing free speech and to failure to express solidarity with the French secularists and the Europeans who are finally recognizing the danger, I think is dangerous itself because, as bin Laden correctly observed, people follow the strong horse. And if we are so intimidated we won't even exercise our own constitutional right of free expression, then we're not a very good team to be joining up with.
We're going to come for Robert Shearer's comments on this after the break. But first, you're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to Left, Right, and Center. I'm your guest moderator, Sarah Terry, with panel regulars Arianna Huffington, Robert Scheer, and Tony Blankley. Robert Scheer, just before the break, we were talking about the publishing of these cartoons that have enraged the Muslim world, The Clash of Civilizations. What's your take on it?
Well, first, I don't know. Did Tony say he published the cartoons?
No.
No, I said I endorsed the idea of encouraging them.
Oh, but my you paper didn't publish them.
No, my paper has not made a decision to publish them.
Okay.
I'm
just
the editorial
want to say,
page editor.
I think it's still just one cartoon in the Philadelphia Inquirer.
No, it's not true.
And the Austin Statesman, I think, has joined since I wrote my column.
Okay.
Well, let me just say, as the editor of Truth Dig faced this issue, we had a story, and we did run one of the cartoons. And we got some outrage over it. I agree with actually Arianna's position that U.S. policy has unnecessarily inflamed Muslim fanaticism, and we recruited Muslim fanatics to Afghanistan, and we have undermined secular regimes. I agree with that, but I totally agree with Tony and Human Events and a lot of the conservative right-wing media. This is a free speech battle, and we have to hold the standard up high. And I think it applies to any religion. We have a cartoon on our page of Jesus where the Catholic are rejecting him because he may be a homosexual. And we certainly print G-O-D without the O blocked out the way Orthodox Jews of some kind would like us to. We have a strong essay in Truth Dig by Sam Harris, which makes a very important point, which is the fringe in the Muslim world now seems to be the dominant tendency. If that's not the case, then we have to hear more from the moderates. But I think as far as upholding a standard of free press that we believe in and freedom that we believe in, the idea that the American media did not give support to beleaguered artists in Europe, it was absolutely shameful.
Okay. That conversation is going to continue as well. Let's, for the time being, move on to the Bush budget. Which we saw this week, a $2.77 trillion budget. Arianna?
I just want to say a quick thing before we move to the budget.
Sure.
Which is when Tony said that people follow a strong horse. I mean, remember, that is the whole Bernard Lewis theory that got us into Iraq, that we had to show this amazing strength so that everybody would follow us. And it turned out to be a major disaster. And I don't think the jury's out as to whether we're creating more terrorists in Iraq or not. Of course we're creating more terrorists. Iraq wasn't even any kind of center of terrorism until we invaded it. And that is like the central flaw of the Bush administration's policy. We have become less safe, we have become less secure because we have inflamed so many Muslims that those radical Muslims who are already engaged have now have all this enormous new numbers of Muslim converts to their extremist cause.
I was quoting Bin Laden, not
But Bernard Lewis doesn't sound very different. Do you remember his famous line, "You're either at the table or you're on the menu"? That was the kind of tough politics of invasion that was being supported. And unfortunately, this extremism is not just restricted to Bin Laden.
Anybody up for the budget yet?
Yeah, I'll be glad to talk about the budget. The president's budget will not be passed by the Republican Congress. They will not make the cuts, all of the cuts that he's proposed. They will not make most of the cuts that he has proposed. And neither will the Democrats, of course. And in fact, the total budget will end up being larger by some significant magnitude than that which he has proposed.
Robert, what do you have to say about what we're looking at?
Well, you know, once again, the war on terror is being used to justify all kinds of pork barrel and military buildup that benefits the donors to the president, that benefits the businesses that Cheney was involved with. It's absurd because, I mean, after all, this terrible terrorist attack was done in the most undercapitalized way. These people had, you know, razors that cost a couple of bucks. If there had been reinforced doors on the cockpit, if we had been willing to pay the money for sky marshals, it wouldn't have happened. If the FBI and the CIA had been talking to each other, it wouldn't have happened. And so to use this so-called war on terror as a justification for the development of conventional hardware and all kinds of boondoggle is unbelievable. Where I don't understand the conservative position is because all my life I've heard from conservatives that we don't want a big government wasting all of our money. And now we have, you know, once again, you look at these budget projections thanks to the tax cuts. If you're at war, you don't make tax cuts. But thanks to these tax cuts, they know that when Bush leaves office, we are going to be saddled with the biggest debt we've ever had in our history, and we're not going to climb out of it. It's just an atrocity that's not even being debated.
It's also an incredible wedge issue for the Democrats, if we can talk politics for a minute.
Let's do that. This is
because, I mean, here you have two enormous wedge issues, the budget and the war. And there are Republicans and especially movement conservatives who believe in America first and believe in a small government who are deserting the president. Not all of them have done it publicly, but many of them are public. I was on Joe Scarborough the other night, and it was kind of interesting. There's supposed to be an equally divided panel, two liberals, two conservatives. Every one of us was against the war because the two conservatives were Pat Buchanan and Tucker Carlson. And that's an indication of what is happening. You had people who don't make the news, like the Republican state senator from New York who's taken on the Republicans on the war. And Tony may say the congresswoman in New Mexico, you may say, well, she's taken these positions on the NSA wiretapping because her numbers are down. Well, I don't buy that. I think people are genuinely, genuinely alarmed by the direction that this administration has taken the country, both on the budget and especially on the war.
This, of course, though, raises the question that we mentioned at the top of the show. The Democrats being in disarray again, not knowing how to sort of create a vision, a voice, get a handle on these issues in a way that can be articulated and win the public over to what they have to say. Robert, how should the Democrats be stepping up to the plate here? Tell them. Advise them. They need it.
Oh, yeah, like they really listen to me.
I think we can arrange it.
Okay. No, I mean, I think Arietta is obviously correct. This is, again, a no-brainer. You're wasting money. Is there a bigger message? You're just wasting money. You're giving tax cuts to people who don't need the tax cuts. Some of them even tell us they don't need the tax cuts at a time when you claim you must build up your military to fight a war that is fought against people who don't have a military.
But the Democrats just don't seem to be getting much traction on this.
They're afraid. They're cowards. Come on, let's get with it. They're afraid of the national security argument. They've always been afraid. And I agree with Tony. When they were in power, they were terrible on these issues. That's why we had the Vietnam War. They're cowards, and people are afraid to take on the national security argument. They're great to abandon logic and reason. We have this enormous military budget now, and we don't have a significant military opponent in the world.
But Robert,
meanwhile,
the Chinese are
taking us to the cleaners because they're not building up a military. They're just making all these contracts all over the world and expanding their markets. And we're the fools that are bankrupting this nation in the name of some kind of notion of national security that is not proportionate to the danger, which is a low-tech danger.
Tony, I'm going to go to you on that, but I'm just Robert, you shot yourself a little bit on the foot with that argument. If the Democrats were so bad in power during the Vietnam War, that's not exactly an argument to have them come back into office during a time when national security is such a threat. Tony.
All, not all Democrats were bad. Let me just answer that. McGovern
Robert.
Was not bad. You know, there were plenty of Democrats who spoke up. What I'm saying is that the centrist leadership of the party, which leads it astray all the time and betrays it, and once again it seems to be doing that, is afraid to take up the national security issue.
Okay.
The political problem the Democrats have is that the principal liberal or leftist base of the Democratic Party, where all the energy is and increasingly where most of the contribution money is, it takes a position that is not popular with 60% of the public. So that's the inherent problem they have. They can't advocate their principles and expect to win elections. So you have a fight within the Democrats amongst those who don't want to advocate the principles and want to do Me Too democracy, where they sort of try to mimic Republicans on national defense and to some extent not being in favor of tax increases, if not. And that undermines the spirit of the Democratic principled base, and that's their dilemma.
I have no idea where you're getting those facts. 66% of the American people want troops withdrawn from Iraq. Jack Mertha just convinced Dick Scaife, for heaven's sake, to be in favor of withdrawal from Iraq. And his flagship paper, the Tribune Review, has editorialized in favor of withdrawal from Iraq. I don't know where are these majorities of mainstream people who want us to stay in Iraq. And this is the signature issue of this administration. To see the Democrats not getting that, buying into the Tony Blankley right-wing spin, is to me tragic. And there it was again on the front page of the New York Times, the Democrats having Another sort of episode of our least favorite long-running political soap opera, another identity crisis about, oh, we can't really fight the Republicans on national security. It's unadulterated rubbish. And anybody, any Democratic leader who believes we cannot find the Republicans on national security should not be a leader, period, the end, no matter what their other credentials.
Well, it's not Tony Blankley, although I wish it were, but it's people like Joe Biden.
Yeah, that's his part of the problem.
And so what you're saying is anyone to the right of Joe Biden.
It's not
in
about
the Democratic
right
Party.
Left. Do you think Dick Scaife is to the left of Joe Biden?
No, he's
Pat Buchanan.
You know
Tucker
Carlson?
I'm talking about the Democratic Party.
No, we should talk about the country.
Each party has its isolationist wing, but the Democratic Party problem is that the Bidens of the Democratic Party, which is the center and moderate part of the Democratic Party, doesn't buy into your analysis. They buy into my analysis, which is why the Democrats are not going to be united, standing out on a strong position against strong defense.
I want to ask each one.
I don't want to raise the volume here, but I just wonder, when you say your analysis, Tony, I mean, is it your analysis that it's wise to stay in Iraq forever or to waste money? I mean, spend another $150 billion on it. This new budget asks for a quick fix of $50 billion. Another $70 billion is indicated months later. Is this really a majority position in this country? Do most Americans want to throw money down a sinkhole and sacrifice young Americans in a situation where we've actually increased the power of Muslim fanatics that scare us about cartoons, but now are finally in power in a country that was secular before we decided to invade it? Is this really a majority position? Is it even one that you're comfortable with?
Tony, just a quick word there. Sorry, we're about out of time.
Yeah, given the clock on the wood, we can't redebate the Iraq war right now.
You can wrap it into your rant.
But the answer is I still believe that Iraq is a situation we have to stay and succeed at, yes.
Okay, time for the famous end-of-show rants. Tony, you get to continue with whatever you want there for about 15 seconds.
While everybody has their own opinion of the state of the economy, the new national consumer attitudes show a big uptick in public confidence. The numbers going from 78 to 96 in consumer confidence, going up in job confidence from 106 to 119 to four-year highs. So although there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of disappointment with the economy, and although Bush is getting no credit for the economy being better, when it comes to the question of what do people think about, are they confident about the economy, the national consumer statistics indicate that the public is increasingly confident.
Ariana, you've got about 15 seconds for your rant.
Well, last night I saw a preview performance of a brilliant new production of George Orwell's 1984, directed by Tim Robbins, and I was struck by the ways that Big Brother uses fear and perpetual war to keep the people of Oceania under control. And the parallels between that play and the president's speech yesterday morning, once again spreading fear, are striking.
Robert Scheer, 15.
I just have a warning for those Americans that are so confident about the economy. Look at the Bush budget. It cuts $38 billion from Medicare. It cuts out really important programs right across the line. And you're not going to get those programs back because this president has spent the Treasury on a needless war in Iraq.
That's all the time we've got today. Thanks, as always, to Robert Scheer, Ariana Huffington, and Tony Blankley. The producer of this program is Sarah Spitz. Our technical director is J.C. Swatek, with engineering assistance from Robert Cooksey at Sports Byline in San Francisco. I'm Sarah Terry. Matt Miller returns next week. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in for the next edition of Left, Right, and Center.
I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.